From WXXI News, I'm Frank Sigelski, and this is Connections. Filling in for Evan Dawson today, the landscape of social media marketing is changing, as are the tools and techniques of the industry itself. Perception of the value of social media in terms of an organization achieving goals are still, many are rooted in the early days of social media and the internet. So we really need an expert to help us out with this. And we have an expert by the name of John Alhart, who is the director of social and digital media at Dixon Schwabel. He was here last month, and I think the president preempted him. And so, you know, sorry
about
that. Yeah,
that makes sense. You know, the president, he's a little bit more important than I am.
Right.
So I understand.
He probably has more Twitter followers than you do or whatever.
he has many more. Yeah. No question. Probably a couple million more, you know.
He's as far as presidents go, obviously the most savvy. Not like George Washington had a chance to get involved in social media, but...
Right, but the Obama campaign, they were very active in it back in 07, 08 to engage that younger voter audience and keep them up to date on the campaign.
Yeah, fantastic. So now, as I understand it, you actually founded the Department of Social and Digital Media at your company, Dixon Schwabel. You founded it, or you saw the need for it. You were already working there. How did that come about?
Yeah, no, and it's a great question. One of the great things about Dixon Schwabel is that it is an entrepreneurial environment. So they want employees to be happy. If you have an idea and a good plan to attack that idea, they'll give you the go-ahead to do it. So mm-hmm. back in 2010, 2011, as I was doing PR and enjoying that, saw the rise in social media and the value it could really provide companies and organizations in their marketing campaign, and decided, you know what, we really should look at starting this social media division and make sure it works in concert with everything else we're doing to help our clients out.
Right, exactly, because we want to, you know, figure out what the best mix is for each of our, you know, I mean, that's what you want to do is some may need more social media, some may need more print, and we can get into that. Mm-hmm. But let's, you know, start with some real basic building blocks, because
yep.
there are some folks who still don't, you know, really use computers that much. So we're talking about, it started out that people would, you know, they would send messages around on the internet, and there would be what we used to call them, message boards and all that.
Message boards and AOL Instant Messenger. When I was in high school, that was the big thing.
Yep, yep.
Dialed up and did the AOL Instant Messenger. And then when I was in college, email was big. And from there, groups and group discussions, and as you said, message boards. And to this day, message boards are still pretty popular. And then that really paved the way for social media, with Facebook bursting onto the scene, and then Twitter. Those were kind of the leaders in the clubhouse. And now we see Instagram and Snapchat and a whole number of other social networks as well.
Right. So at some point, someone was watching all this chatter, and people are saying, I really enjoyed the concert by, you know, the band last night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're going to play again tonight. And someone said, hey, that gets around. People will go see this act. How can we marshal that to support our business, or, you know, not just for-profit business, but any organization that needs to get a message out there to the public? I mean, that's how it started, right? I mean,
that's how it started.
I mean, people were really just telling, I don't want to say they're not telling the truth now, but it wasn't like an intentional thing where I'm going to put things out there in social media or out in cyberspace to effectuate a result. People are just saying what they did that day.
Exactly. The old word of mouth. And,
okay.
It's one of those things. We've all, especially here in Rochester, we have so many great restaurants. You go out to eat, you have a great meal, you want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You put that out there, your friends see that on Facebook, and they're thinking, you know what, I've been meaning to go to that place, but haven't made it there yet. Let me make a reservation for next weekend and check it out. That word of mouth, that is a lot of how it started. Still very important and a part of the social media landscape today. You want that word of mouth. You want your fans, the people who support your brand, to become those brand ambassadors in the social media space. Because, you know, we talk all the time about the negatives of social media. People talk about, oh, you know, Twitter's a bunch of trolls and, you know, negative conversation. But there is a lot of positive conversation. And when you reward those who are following you on social media, when you recognize and thank them for being fans, they're going to talk even more positive about your brand, too.
Okay. So first of all, anytime I hear an expression that catches my interest, like brand ambassador,
yeah.
I'm going to write it down.
Sure.
Maybe we'll come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about trolls later. But where did that divide between, you know, just encouraging people to talk, and then intentionally putting things out there, and there's got to be an ethical line somewhere. You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
I mean, you know, people.
Everything has to be factually correct.
Well, I mean, yeah. I want to know what the, you know, how the industry evolved, what the standard is. Are there ethical rules? I mean, I know like the, you know, the hosting entities have their own guidelines.
Right, right.
Like it used to be on Google Plus, you had to use your real name. I mean, you couldn't use a fake name, but how would they know? Whatever. But let's talk about those things for a bit, because I think that's misunderstood as well, John.
Sure. It's like, you know, social media kind of it grew like anything else back when TV and radio first started. You have this popular medium that people are tuning into because they want to receive good content. They're interested in what's being shared on those platforms. From there, businesses start to notice and say, you know what? There's a lot of eyeballs on this Facebook. There's a lot of folks that are on Twitter. And they're talking. And to get our brand message out there, we should be on there as well, talking with them and sharing insight of what's going on at our company. So the people came first, and it became one of those friends talking and keeping themselves up to date. From there, the brands decide, you know what, we really should be in this space as well. And it's also the social media platforms evolving and realizing to make some money on this, they're going to need brand support and becoming more business friendly.
Right. And that's the $20,000 question is, how do some of these companies make money? Because you just assume that, you know, if it's Facebook or whatever it is, they're making money. But the business model is still in flux. And I think folks are still trying to figure that out, because I know guys like you. I mean, I have never paid for any click ever. And I never will. I just don't even want to go there.
Sure.
And so, you know, okay, I'm going to be forced to watch a few ads on the side of my page or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. That's just like a, you know, an ad spot on television or radio.
Exactly.
Okay, so there's that. All right, so now, at some point, keep going.
No, and I think you actually provided a good analogy there of just like when you're watching TV at night and say you're watching the Mets game. If you're a Mets fan, you got the commercials, their sponsors. You're watching the commercials, then it's back to the game. Social media is very similar in the sense that if you are on Twitter, I'll just give you an example for what we did recently with a client. It was a customer service webinar that they were going to be doing. So we're promoting this customer service webinar. How do we do that? How do we use Twitter to do that? We actually took the target markets that that company operates out of, and we searched for all the folks who had used customer service in their tweet in the past month. From there, we are able to put out a tweet promoting the webinar to those states, those markets, and to those folks who have used customer service within their tweet within the last 30 days to let them know about the customer service webinar that's taking place. So an example of how we basically, based on what that person was doing and acting, how they were acting online, we were able to get our message in front of them. And it is something that they would be interested in.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's a qualified prospect.
That's what you're dealing with.
If someone's searching for automobiles, they're going to, you know, you assume that they would like to see an ad for an automobile, or at least, you know, it's something that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that. Okay, so there's that type of social media marketing. I guess I just want to hear the part about where people make things up.
Well, and I will say, and we are not making anything up with the brands.
John,
but you're right.
Believe me, you're here because you're, you know, obviously you're reputable. We know you, and plus we know your Twitter handle.
So that's right. So you can come and get me at John Eller. But no, you're right. There are times when brands might make something up. There's times when individuals might make something up. And that's where social media is no different than any conversation you might be having at a cocktail party. Mm-hmm. We all know those friends who might embellish the truth a little bit. First of all, it's up to the brands to be honest, you know, no question about it. At the same time, it's up to us as consumers and folks who are taking in this content to kind of put it through our thought process to say, is this real or is this not real? Is this stat true? Is it not true if they're not attributing the source in that statistic?
Right, right, right. That's where you see fake is the only comment.
Fake.
Or what is it, Snopes or Snoops? How do you pronounce that? Snope?
The truth site. Snopes, yeah.
Snopes. You go there to find out if something is...
if it's truthful or not.
Right, sure. Right. So,
and think about it. Political ads, same thing. We don't really know how much of it's the truth or not. You know, they're going to take make some certain leeways with that to get their message out there. And that's not right, but it's done. So it really is, it's like any content that you're absorbing. You really got to put it through your filter to see if it is true or not.
Right, right. I think of like product placement as another analogy. You know, did Fred Flintstone really smoke Winston cigarettes? I mean, right? You do know that they used to
advertise Winston.
No question
about it. You know, and Mackenzie Childs is a wonderful brand. They actually, their brand is so good that their products, you'll notice, they don't try to do it. But celebrities, anytime you watch a reality show, if you see in the kitchen, you'll a lot of times see a Mackenzie Childs teapot.
Okay.
And it's not something Mackenzie Childs in that sense planned. That was organic and natural, and it's great product advertising. But you're right, there is that too, that product placement that's popular with shows like 24 and some of the more action-oriented right. shows as well.
Right, right. Sometimes it's so obvious I just have to chuckle. But anyway, I mean, that's – anyway. John,
exactly.
John Ehlhardt is the Director of Social and Digital Media at Dixon Schwabel, and we're talking about the braver new world of social media and digital marketing. And if you want to join the show, the number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Okay, so what are some of the other things? Now, we're talking about the changing landscape. And, you know, what are some beliefs that folks have that maybe aren't true? I know there's a question as to, you know, how valuable a campaign in mm-hmm. social and digital media can be. What would you pay for it? How do you value it? And so can we go in that direction?
For sure. And changing landscape is a good way to put it, because when we started this social media division a few years ago at Dixon Schwabel, you would put your content out there. You would make sure you follow key influencers and brand ambassadors and make sure you're connecting with them. But you weren't really sure when you put content out there how many people were seeing it. Now, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they have advanced their analytic platforms where you can see how many people you reached with a specific post. You can see how many people are engaging with it. And by that, I mean, are they liking it? Are they commenting? Are they sharing? Are they retweeting in the Twitter space or at replying in the Twitter space? So, and then you're able to also track, all right, based on my social media campaign, how many people are going to my website? How many people are going to this product page to pay for a product that I want them to buy? You don't want social media to be a hard sell. People aren't on it to buy products, but it is a nice way to provide them valuable content where they might say to themselves, you know what, I am interested in checking out the Red Wings tonight and mm-hmm. going to the game, and I'm going to go online and buy some tickets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the analytics is a big thing.
The analytics is a big change.
I mean, that's a real driver there, because, sure, in the past, it's, you know, it's like other types of broadcast advertising as opposed to directory advertising. Mm-hmm. You don't know. I mean, for many businesses, they get a customer. Maybe it was from the billboard out on the road, or maybe sometimes it's really hard to know.
Sometimes it's tough to find out.
And these platforms, you're saying, have gotten to the point where they can measure all those variables.
They really can. I mean, I could tell you within real time, 4 minutes ago, how many people have seen a specific brand's Facebook post, and how many people have liked it, and are they going to a website because of it? Not every post is going to drive people to a website, but if that were the case. And the other thing I'm seeing is a lot of brands will say, well, you know, we have a Facebook page, we have 1,500 fans, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
But when I put a post out there, only 30 people are seeing it. So what's the point of Facebook? Well, Facebook has changed its algorithm where it now limits to about less than 5% of your brand's following is seeing your content. Facebook needs to make money. This is one of the ways they're going to make money. So they need brands to put a couple bucks behind a post to what they call promote it. It could be $5, it could be $10, it could be $200, depending on your budget. That will ensure more people will see it. And obviously, the more you pay, the more people will see it.
Okay, well, wait a minute. So before a company, anyone could just post what they wanted and say, I'm with the Red Wings. I make money. If you go to a Red Wings game, go to the Red Wings game. Okay, and that would be free.
Mm-hmm.
And now Facebook, for example, is changing their policy to – how do they know who's in it?
You know, let's take the Red Wings example. Say they want to promote a family fun night that's happening this Saturday. In the past, 3-4 years ago, they would put that post on their Facebook page and hope people are seeing it. Now they know how many people are seeing it, and to get more people to see it, they can pay Facebook, let's say $75. If they paid Facebook $75, they could target Rochester, New York, plus 10 miles. They could target Pittsburgh if they wanted to focus on one specific suburb. And they could target people interested in baseball and the Red Wings. So people who might not like their page. Next thing you know, those people are watching TV tonight. they're going through their Facebook newsfeed, they see that post from the Red Wings.
Okay.
And the Red Wings can take, with just $75, they could reach about 20,000 people with that post, which 20,000 people, that could be a local newscast for a 30-second spot. That's a big audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's not like all of a sudden folks are having to pay for something that used to be free. They're paying for something that in a way used to be free but now is enhanced with more targeted
exactly.
delivery. Is that the difference?
And the targeted target is the key, you know. There's a lot of times brands will come to us and they'll say, we're just not seeing a lot of engagement with our Facebook campaign. And then we'll go into the analytics and we'll look at their audience. And lo and behold, the people that are following the page, half of the people aren't even in that brand's target market that they serve. So you can, by using advertising, get the right people to follow your page so that they're actually interested in the content you're sharing.
Okay, fantastic. All right, we're going to go to the phones again if you want to join the show. John Ehlhardt is our guest for this hour of Connections. He's Director of Social and Digital Media at Dixon Schwabel. The number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Jane is first today on Connections. Jane, you're on the air.
Okay, you're talking about social media and Facebook. And what I just heard was that now it's not free, but what you're paying for is enhanced commercial targeted markets. That is so male.
So
male and so impersonal. Why do you think that kind of language would appeal to people? And let me just say this, because I don't expect any agreement at all. What I've heard is about advertising, brands, commerce, helping others make more money. I have no interest in helping others make more money. I'm interested in poverty, and I don't know what Red Wings is, and I don't care. I know it's a sport. It could be football, baseball, whatever. And I don't understand why we need all these things to pay for. As you said, we used to get it free, and we are inundated with advertising everywhere. I don't have cable anymore. I got tired of being used to trying to sell me some product. So I have very negative feelings about this. And why can't it be talked about even as useless as I think it is in some sort of human terms? It's like I said, enhanced commercial target markets. What a turnoff. Thank you very much.
Jane, I just have a quick question for you. Yeah. Are you on Facebook?
No. I don't have a computer. I don't have any of that stuff.
See,
I don't have cable
anymore. Right. No, and that's the point. So that's great in that you don't have to be on Facebook. You don't have to be on Facebook, and you aren't. You made a good choice there because you're not interested in being on it, so you don't have to be on
it. And I'm saying these are, to me, the negatives of it. It's so distanced from anything human, the way you talk about it. And it just sounds like another way to why would anybody want to subject themselves to more advertising?
All right, Jane, we appreciate the call.
Yeah,
you know, again, I think we have to make note that these campaigns can be used to support any cause. It doesn't
for
have
sure.
to be
she
a
She mentioned
four.
Poverty. That's a
exactly.
You can definitely do a cause to promote people to raise money for organizations that support helping those.
Right,
poverty.
Right. I mean, there are any number of the Heart Association, and I mean, they all are involved in social media. And I think, you know, John, this is interesting because there is a misconception right there. Jane's a smart lady. She listens to to WXXI regularly, and her comments, I understand.
I do too. And, you know, and I do agree in a couple points that she made. First of all, it does have to be personal. It does have to be something that people actually care about. That goes back to that targeting method. So if you're a baseball fan, you might want to see content from your favorite team. That is valuable content for you. Now, Jane is someone that doesn't want to be on Facebook, and she isn't. That's good for her. She doesn't have to be on Facebook. No one is forcing you to be on these social media channels. If you happen to be on these social media channels, you are going to get content that ties in with what you're interested in. And like anything else, I'm going to be on, I'm going to watch TV and see an ad maybe that I don't want to see. I'm going to be on my Facebook news feed and see something I don't want to see. The goal as a brand is you don't want to be that brand that is spamming people, that is not being personal. And that's where Jane makes a good point.
Yeah, yeah, because that can be actually backfire and can be quite annoying.
I mean, exactly. You
know, I mean, there are folks who probably will never purchase, let's say, Progressive Insurance because they don't like Flo.
That's right.
You know, I mean, seriously, some people are, I mean.
They're overflow.
They're over. Okay. Let's take Bernard in Fairport. You're on the air. Bernard, welcome Hi. To Connections.
Thank you. I'm an old-time computer guy, and we had a group of people that got together to decide how to defeat the social advertising stuff on the various media. And then after about 3 or 4 weeks, he said, who cares? Let's just delete it. So it's kind of like, you know, our mentality was, let's not waste any time on it, let's just ignore it. And my question really is that as part of this as a business, why should we trust Google or Facebook or anybody to actually give us the right information? I mean, it's very easy for them to say, oh, we have 25,000 people that are interested in baseball in Rochester, but the truth of the matter is that, you know, you talk about analyzing things, but they own the data. They can manipulate it any way they want. So but, who would trust these people to give you the right information?
Well, they have to give brands the right information, because if they don't, their campaigns that the brands are executing won't be as effective, and brands won't be spending as much money with those platforms. So when you talk about Google,
they know how to work it all over. I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm just saying that these people are very good at working these numbers. And I'm not saying they're lying to us. I'm just saying that, you know, why would I trust them? Because they own all of the information. They're not audited by anybody. So, you know, you're saying, well, if they lie to you, the market will take effect. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, they're isolated from the marketing taking effect, because the market doesn't have the information. So, for example, if you sell this service to somebody, how do they get the legitimate feedback that the 25,000 people that their message got delivered to were in fact categorized as the right market? And I'll take your comments off the air.
Well, and that's a good point. As far as when it comes down to the numbers, we can't just tell brands that this is how many people we reached. It's a good point. As far as we also have to show them, okay, here's the people that did like it. We can tell them the people that do like it, and we can see where those people live, and based on what they're posting, their interests. But then also, you know, say in a sports example, if I'm doing a golf campaign, ultimately we'll be judged on social media's impact on motivating people to buy tickets for the tournament. So if I am reaching people that aren't interested in golf, say Google or Facebook for some reason is manipulating the data, it will show in the results. It will show that, hey, you know what? Facebook didn't produce those ticket sales that we said it was going to. Yeah, you reached 80,000 people, but nobody bought tickets.
Right.
So the numbers won't lie when it comes down to that point. You really do have to drill deep with the numbers and the analytics. It's a good point. But, you know, even the Google sense of do they make up the data, Google is going on what you search by. So if I'm searching Buffalo Bills blog, Google, it's not Google making the presumption that I'm interested in the Buffalo Bills blog. I'm actually searching for it.
Right.
And so the same thing with Facebook. It really is based on what you're posting on your personal page. That's how Facebook decides what you're interested in. Is it an exact science? Is it perfect? Of course not.
Right.
But it's pretty close.
And I think it's important as we have this conversation to distinguish between the platforms, the, you know, like what would be the equivalent of the network. You've got, you know, your Googles and your Facebooks and your Twitters, and they're the ones who are, you know, trying to sell to advertisers. They're providing information to the advertisers in terms of, you know, who they're reaching.
Right.
But then there's the customer, you know, the golf tournament that wants to use a platform. And so, you know, when we say, are they telling the truth, we need to determine, you know, who we're talking about. I think that's important.
Exactly. And, you know, the callers are bringing up wonderful points in that I think the big picture of what they're saying is you really do have to put it through a lens of is it real or not. When you're consuming this content and when you're a brand, you have to make sure the content you're producing is honest and truthful and what your audience cares about. So great points are being raised.
Okay, let's see. Danielle is next on Connections. You're on the air.
Hi there. I have two pieces. One, I have a Facebook page for myself and for my business, and I've actually paid a little bit. I'm a dance movement therapist, occasionally to have a sponsored piece, and used to get numbers of people, new people who were interested, etc. But I don't anymore. That's if I tried once more to pay and it didn't do anything. But the second thing I wanted to say is I belong to a Facebook page called the Corfu Grapevine or something like that. It's like a Craigslist of the island of Corfu in Greece, because I work there and I do living dance, living music workshops on that island. And
wow.
Just came back
Very nice.
From there.
That's but a good place to do workshops.
I wanted to tell you a great story that happened. I wrote on the Corfu Grapevine, anybody interested in having dance therapy for children? And a Greek psychologist contacted me. And the result of it is, it was completely free, that I, along with two of my students and this Greek psychologist, ended up creating a dance therapy program for a wonderful home for children who are homeless or have been abandoned by their families that was like 15 minutes from the wellness center where I work that I had never even known about.
Hmm.
And so the result of it was something wonderful.
Fantastic. I appreciate the story.
That's a great example of interpersonal communication through social media. And you really can do that. She knew her audience there.
Mm-hmm.
She knew who might potentially see it. She shared a good message and saw something out of it. And that's a good point to bring up. A lot of this can be done without putting money behind it. You know, if you really are targeted like she was in that instance.
Right.
But if you do want to get your message out to a larger audience of those who might be connected to your brand or want to be connected to your brand, you do have to put a little bit behind it. As far as the sponsored stories, you know, one, not everyone's going to work. If you do one and it doesn't work and you do another that doesn't work, still try, still tinker with it, still figure out who can we target differently, how can I make the content better. Facebook's not lying there. It's going to tell you who is engaging with your content and who isn't, and based on that, you can tailor the messaging so that it's more of a fit for your audience.
Okay, you said sponsored stories.
Mm-hmm.
Was it?
That's basically what we were talking about before, where you do a post on your Facebook page. If you don't sponsor it, tops 5% of the people who like your page are going to see it. If you do sponsor it, people who are interested in your subject matter and who follow your page are going to see it. A greater percentage of those folks.
Right, right, and that's where the putting support behind it comes into play, and we can talk about that during the second half of the show.
Yeah,
we have folks on hold, but we're going to take our short break now. John Elhart. Sorry, come on, man.
He's on social media too.
Exactly.
He likes it. Yeah, hopefully we'll hear from some folks who like it in a second.
I would love to hear from your dad. Okay.
All right.
Anyway, I'm Frank Sigelski, sitting in for Evan Dawson today, and you're listening to Connections on WXXI AM, WEOS, the WXXI mobile app, and WXXINews.org.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Rohrbach Brewing Company, hosting the Flower City Brewers Fest, an evening featuring craft beers, food trucks, and live music, Friday, August 22nd at the Rochester Public Market. Tickets and information at flowercitybrewfest.com.
Okay, continuing on Connections, I'm Frank Sigelski in for Evan Dawson today. Our guest in studio is John Elhart. He's the Director of Digital and Social Media at Dixon Schwabel, and we're talking about the brave new world of social media marketing. It's not what your teenager may be telling you. It's not what you maybe learned about in the early part of the century. And if you want to join the show, the number is 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255. Let's take the next caller because he's been waiting patiently. Pete, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I don't recall citizens of this country ever voting to give up their right to their personal information so that private companies can profit from that. I am a citizen of this country. I own me. I own my personal information. Just because I engage in a transaction with a company does not give that company legal right to use my information. You get a right to engage in the transaction with me solely for that purpose. You want to use my personal information for profit, then first of all, you have to ask and get my written permission and that I should be compensated adequately for that use.
Okay, Pete, you raise a lot of good points. I'm sorry, Pete, we got to move on to the next.
But also, you know, part of that, when you agree to be on Facebook,
you're
agreeing to some of those
yeah,
things. So again,
No.
Make the choice to be on Facebook or not.
That is based in the foundation that they have legal right to my personal information. The bottom line is I have a legal right to my personal information. And again, because I engage in a transaction with a big company does not give them the right to my personal information to profit from.
Okay, Pete, we're going to step aside because we're using
I will say, though, if say Pete does a personal transaction, he goes to Big Oak and buys a driver. Facebook's not going to know that. So when you're doing a transaction that's not online, they're not going to be able to drill down that deep. We're talking about what you are talking about in the online space. People are going to know. Organizations are going to know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, okay, first of all, you don't have an expectation of privacy in that case because, you know, it's a public forum
exactly, or
somewhat limited. I would agree with Pete in the sense that, look, I've probably never read the thing that I agreed to on the internet. John, I mean, you can support me there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's
face it.
I mean,
there's a lot of text there.
And, you know, it's just like, okay, blah, 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 and I agree. And then you've agreed to give up information that guys like Pete don't want to give up. So I understand his anger. And that's an area where there could be some reforms. You know, my search engines on one of my computers got co-opted by this interface. That now I have to go through them to get to Google, you know.
There are ways around it.
I know.
You can clear your cache. You can clear your cookies. There are ways to get around it.
Yes, but I don't like the fact that they sort of slid it in under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't just like I was consenting to, you know, location information or something. It was like I'm consenting to have my hard drive redone. And that, you know, that can't just be on a long list of a thing where you put I agree. Would you agree?
I agree. I mean, I think it is important to be very mindful when you're online of what you're sharing and what you're not. And you can, by clearing out certain data within your computer, make sure that a lot of the content you're sharing isn't going to follow you around in the online space.
Okay.
No question.
All right. Let's get to sort of the nuts and bolts of, let's say I'm a not-for-profit and I've got a cause, I don't know, clean the rivers. Let's just call it clean the rivers, okay? And I come to you and say, we need to get more, you know, we need people to know about clean the rivers because the rivers are dirty. And so we're already doing some stuff with your company. We do some television advertising and some, you know, with those, what are those, public spots on the air, you know, public
PSAs.
PSAs. Yep. We've got a couple of those that we've been able to latch on to. But what would you do with you know, someone like a company like that? And I want to stay with a nonprofit, Save the Rivers, because I want to make sure that folks understand that this applies to any type of organization, not just ones that need to maximize profits. Because that's correct.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, though, in the for-profit sense, it's not so much to maximize profits. I mean, you are providing a service and an offering to folks that are choosing to buy it. So, you know, sometimes I think people just get way too worked up over this stuff and it gets out of control. When you get to the nonprofit side, social media can have a great impact as well, no question. And when it comes to that, a nice way to start is to identify maybe 10 or 15 folks who are really passionate about that organization. You know, I'm a member of Rotary. I love to give back. A key part of Rotary is installing clean water in parts of the country that don't have it. Right?
Okay, like Save the Rivers.
Like Save the Rivers, exactly. We'll stick with the Clean Rivers Initiative.
Oh, this is true.
And, you know, you get 10 or 15 people who are passionate about it that are sharing on their own pages with their friends why they're passionate about it and why it's important to support it. Those are some of those brand ambassadors that we were talking about earlier. Okay. Also, it's important for the Clean Rivers Initiative in this case to share content on their page, on their Facebook, Twitter, whatever social media channel they choose, about the benefits of supporting them. You know, when you give money to this project, what are you ultimately supporting? To share some stories, some testimonials of the impact the organization has had. Providing valuable content that people can check out and say, you know what, by supporting this initiative, I really am making a difference.
Right, like maybe a list of the dirtiest rivers in the country or the cleanest water to drink or whatever it is that's useful.
Exactly, useful information.
Yep. Okay.
And again, going back to the points we were making in the first part of the show, you got to make sure people are seeing that content. And you want to target, in addition to the folks that are brand ambassadors and representing the Clean Rivers Initiative, folks who are interested in volunteering and giving back in clean water projects to get them involved as well.
Okay. So that would that be something that would happen at a first meeting? If I'm sitting down with you in your office and this is part of that conversation. Because, you know, I'll have my own ideas. And again, in getting ready for this show, I wanted to focus on the misconceptions because that seems to be what you know, I've heard from your office that so many folks still believe it to be the way it was 10 years ago.
Sure.
So what else might happen then? And how would that tie in with, let's say, if I had a television or a radio campaign?
Yeah, and the beauty, too, if say you have a TV campaign that's going – we can take that video that's a part of the TV campaign, and we can also share that on the Facebook page. We can share that so that people are seeing it in their news feed, so that if they don't watch TV that night or they don't have the TV on, maybe they're reading and then they're checking Facebook, they can then go on their news feed and see that commercial. Mm-hmm. So that's a great way for the traditional media to play in the social media space because it does all have to work together. And then we would work to see when those spots are running and make sure that when they're running on TV, they're also running in the same time on these social media channels as well.
Mm-hmm.
That initial meeting that you mentioned is key. That's when we want to get as much information as possible. We would maybe identify some of those brand ambassadors. We'd identify some of the great content and work the organization is doing. And from there, put together an editorial calendar. You know, we would put together 2 to 3 weeks of posts of content that the organization could share to keep the audience engaged and involved with the project.
Okay. And so to that extent, you do a little pre-planning is sort of a redundant term, but you've got it targeted so that in 7 days, an article that isn't really doesn't have to be it's not time sensitive, an article on clean rivers will then be there.
Right.
Okay.
And it's also, you know, keeping up to date on the news and the latest trends and what's happening around that organization and the industry at large and making sure that content shared that way is tying into current events as well.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phones. Again, if you want to join the show, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And let's see, we have Stephen in Rochester. Stephen, welcome to Connections. You're on the air. Stephen, come ahead. Stephen? Okay.
Finding out more about, local type connections and how Facebook and other online advertisers can really emphasize like a local type area instead of always pushing like a national brand or something like that. And I'll take my answer.
Wait, hang on there because that was a good part of the question. We caught the second half of it. We just need to hear that first part again.
Yeah, could you start the question?
That's right.
Sure. So just the basic question is, you know, how can internet advertising focus more on local stuff? You mentioned the Red Wings earlier, as you know, and that's a nice local organization. And you know, it would be nice to know about things happening down the street or around the corner, and how we can develop those types of connections better. So it's not like, oh, I have to drive for 40 minutes to get to this thing, or I can just, you know, walk outside and see it.
That's a great point, and I'll actually give you a Rotary example. For that, Pittsford Rotary, so one of the local Rotary clubs, they partner with our community bikes to do a bike collection every year. So if you have a bike you're not using anymore, Pittsford Rotary works with our community bikes to collect the bikes, and then our community bikes, you know, repurposes the bikes for inner city youth to use. Wonderful program.
Mm-hmm.
And Pittsford Rotary was saying, you know what, in the past we've done print ads, we've emailed folks who we think might be interested, we put it on our website, and we're going to continue to do that. How can we use Facebook to do this as well? So from Pittsford Rotary's Facebook page, we targeted folks who live in Pittsford, New York, who are parents Because, you know, if you get that 30 and above crowd who are parents, chances are they have a bike in their garage they're not using anymore. And
you've been in my garage.
And let them know that this collection was taking place in early May, the location, where they could drop it off, all the valuable information they would need. By spending less than $100, we were able to reach 20,000 people in the Pittsford, New York area in that parents' audience. And Pittsford Rotary went from collecting 140 bikes last year to over 200 this year, and they actually surpassed their goal. And I'm glad you brought up that question, because that's where Facebook and social media can be at its very best. And, you know, callers have brought up some good concerns about it over the course of the hour, and I'm glad we're having that discussion. But this is where it can really be at its best, when you're drilling down to that neighborhood-level content. Facebook can do that unlike any other.
Right, right. But the other ones, I mean, you know, Twitter. Which ones are the most popular that you guys – I mean, obviously Facebook and Twitter.
Yep.
But are there – which other ones are you know, have the analytics – to, you know, to be able to show that they're effective in terms of what they're doing?
Sure. So Facebook is far and away number one as far as those who are using it. And then it's the rest. You know, Twitter is very popular. Instagram is rising, and probably about 20% of online users are on Instagram. Pinterest is big.
Mm-hmm.
For folks who are particularly interested in recipes and home improvement projects and inspiration and creative design, Pinterest is a great place for that. Snapchat is it's 77% of college students are on Snapchat. Oh, look at that. There's a college student calling right now.
I know.
That's another one where that's a service. It's basically 5-6 second video messages that you're sending to friends. Almost acts like a texting service.
Are those
but
the ones
it's
that disappear
media.
After a certain amount
and
of time?
And then they disappear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why the college students are using it. I wonder why they want to disappear.
Yeah. It was, you know, my wife and I were at Dave Matthews last month at Darien Lake. The folks in front of us, the kids, they were Snapchatting the whole show.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
10 seconds of this song, 10 seconds of that. Here's what I'm listening to now.
And then,
so that's a big one.
They don't want to leave an electronic trail or whatever.
They don't want to leave an electronic trail. And then we haven't talked a lot about LinkedIn, but LinkedIn is a great business resource
mm-hmm.
for B2B focused companies, for those who are looking to get career tips or grow their career. LinkedIn is the place to be. That's where people are talking shop. That's where you can really learn some key insight that'll help you grow your career and make some valuable connections.
Okay, how about just the search engines? Again, Google is, you know, Google, Yahoo,
yep.
any of those, because, again, they have their – I mean, Google's analytics are – I would imagine
they're unbelievable. I mean, they can – you can drill down to how – what's the average time people are spending on your website?
Mm-hmm.
What are the top landing pages that they're going to? How are people finding your website? What's the percentage of male versus female folks that are on your website? Again, I know folks sometimes don't want to hear that the data gets that detailed, but it really does, and you can see the popularity of your website based a lot on Google Analytics.
Right. What about some of the other search engines? I mean, they're all. I would imagine they're all trying to find a way.
They are. You know, and at the end of the day, Google is far and away the best.
Right.
You know, they probably have more than 75%. Of the online search taking place.
What about internationally? What is it, Alibaba or there's?
You know, and we don't do a lot with international search engines,
okay.
So I'm not as well versed in those. And obviously, every country has different guidelines and what folks can do when they're on the internet. But that is one.
That's another example. Okay, so really, the takeaway so far, at least one major takeaway, is that the analytics, the fact that they can get information. I'm going to say drill down, just like you say. That's how they can justify charging for the service, because now they have something they can show the customer.
Right, and also. They can justify, because you are making sure that the message you're putting out there is reaching people. You know, before, Facebook was almost like you create a TV spot, but no station was going to run it. Now you can make sure that people are seeing that content. And overall, most of the content that you are seeing is content you're interested in. I guarantee it. If you're on Facebook, they're not going to send you content that you're not interested in. If they are, the brand isn't doing their job.
Right. And if you're sitting there watching something you're not interested in, you need to pick up the remote or, you know, you have that choice.
Exactly.
All right. I don't want to leave anything out. Can you talk a bit about page clicks, AdWords, you know, and search engine optimization? That's a whole nother area. But
sure.
Tell us a bit about some of these concepts, because people hear them.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people hear search engine optimization, and then they hear search engine marketing. They hear SEO, they hear SEM, and they think it's the same thing, and it's not.
Okay.
So search engine optimization, based on some of the calls we've had today, folks will like search engine optimization. Okay. So it's based on what you are searching organically. Certain results will come up based on what you're searching. Now, certain brands can get higher up on the page. They can be one or two on the page instead of on the third page of results.
Right.
By being on social media, by having a blog, by being active and keeping their website up to date. You know, there are ways to improve your search engine optimization.
Yeah, well, right, right. And also, you can pay for that.
The paid is the SEM, so that's the search engine marketing. So maybe, you know, some of the folks who called earlier, they might not like search engine marketing. But search engine marketing is the same principle, only brands are now paying to be on that first page of results, ideally to be the top result. 85% of clicks on search engine marketing campaigns come from that top result, the first one you see on the page.
Okay.
And then it drops down to less for the second and the third. But when you do a Google search, you will see things in yellow. Mm-hmm. At the top of your page, you'll see things on the right side of the page.
Mm-hmm.
Those are ads. Those are search engine marketing initiatives. Brands are paying. Every time you click on that link, brands are paying Google.
Okay.
You know, we did this. We had great success with this with the PGA Championship. How do we get folks to buy tickets for the PGA Championship? You might think, oh, you know, that's easy. It's a major golf tournament.
Right,
exactly. There's a lot of stuff going on. People are busy. It is hard to move tickets. PGA did a great job of it. One way was through search engine marketing. So if you typed in PGA Championship or PGA Golf or PGA Tickets and you lived within a 300-mile radius of Rochester, up at the top of that SEM campaign was a link that drove you to the ticket sales page.
Okay.
And we saw great success, 3-to-1 ROI on that campaign.
So, okay, all right, fantastic. Congratulations. The search engine optimization, that is based upon text-rich type things that the advertiser or the company is doing.
Or organic content, right.
Right.
How they're building the website, content they're sharing on their website, what they're sharing in the social media space.
Right.
And Google changes that algorithm maybe hundreds of times every year. It's unbelievable. So you really – to drill down into the exacts of search engine optimization is difficult. But if you are keeping your website up to date, if you have a strong foundation of how you built your website, if you're on social media, those are some good ways to make sure you pop up higher on that.
Right, right, because you're going to have the words in there that are relevant to your business and to what your consumers would be looking for.
Right.
The reason I bring this up is that I had heard that in the early days of social media marketing and that companies would just type the dictionary into their, you know, so that no matter what you typed, you know, rutabaga, it would. The first thing that would pop up would be this company because it was in the text of their website, for example.
Right. And, you know, and that's a good example of that. That's serving up content that people don't want because they're not looking for content that's not related to rutabaga. So I think that's where brands have gotten a lot smarter now. And there's so much competition now. You really have to make it a part of specific terms tied to your brand. There's also a great way if people are searching for your competitors, you can get by using a good SEM campaign, you can be number one.
Ah.
You know, so for a landscaping company, because I know they're coming in next. Say you're competing against a landscaping company, you can put that in as part of your campaign. One of your competitors, keyword terms, and then you come up.
Interesting. Yeah, you're the insider here. That's why you're on the radio here. All right, let's go back to the phones and do we have a question? Oh, this is for. Okay, all right, fantastic. That was a call off the air. Something about. Reputation and intrusiveness and privacy, something along those lines. Yeah. It is interesting how folks really, it's almost like a hot button concept, the reactions that folks have to, you know, public intercourse, if you will. I mean, so that's social media and then harnessing what people are doing to, you know, achieve a result.
Yeah, and I understand it. I'm one of those people, you know, my life's pretty boring, so you can you can follow as much as you want, and I don't care. You can find out all the information about me. So I am a Mets and a Bills fan. Target me with Mets and Bills content. That's fine. I'm one of the few that probably likes both teams. But I totally get it. I do get why people shouldn't have to have their privacy infringed if they don't want to. And there are ways around it. Of course, the easiest way is just to not be on Facebook and some of these social media platforms. Also, though, if you are on Facebook, go into your settings, your privacy settings. Make sure you have a private profile. There's a lot of things you can uncheck to make sure Facebook can't track specific things. Now, you have to go in pretty regularly because sometimes an update may be made to Facebook and next thing you know, those settings are reversed.
Right.
There are ways around it. And I do get – I'm glad the callers brought it up today because it is important. If you don't want your information shared out there, there are ways around it. And you could still be on Facebook at the same time if you want to be. Go into your settings. That's a gold mine. Right. Most people don't go into their settings. By going in there, you can really eliminate a lot of that.
Right. You can make it so that only certain people see what you post. And that's just a simple example.
But it is funny that, you know, because people are and they should be worried about it. But isn't it funny? Because when you go on your Facebook newsfeed, most of the time the content you're seeing, people aren't shy at all.
Right.
About their political beliefs, about what they love, about what they hate.
About where their tattoos are located with photographs.
That's right. So for the most part, people aren't shy at all about the stuff they're putting out there.
Yes, until it's something. But I do have an issue with the fine print, if you will, when it's something really significant.
Sure.
You know, like that example.
And again, and to your point earlier with the Google example, I mean, go into your browser and clear the cookies, clear the cache in those settings. Just like you have settings within your Facebook page, you have settings within your
search engine,
Firefox, and your Internet Explorer and your Safari. Go in there and clear those out because that does make a difference.
Right, right. Okay, one more. Let's see. Keywords, AdWords. AdWords, what's that?
Both. Yeah, AdWords, keyword. Google has an AdWords tool. So, for instance, with that PGA campaign, I typed in PGA Championship to the AdWords tool that Google has. From there, I get to see per month the related searches, the top related searches to that topic. Uh-huh. So that way, when you're building your campaign, you know to build those keywords in by using the AdWords tool.
All right, fantastic. All right, that is John Ehlhardt.
It was fun. Hopefully, maybe, some folks came around to liking social media by the end. Right?
All right, what's your Twitter handle if they want to?
At John Ehlhardt, JonAlhart. Fire away, and I'll respond to good and bad.
All right. Thank you very much. Terrific hour. And on behalf of Roger Nelson, our board operator today, I'm Frank Sigelski, sitting in for Evan Dawson. We'll be back with another hour of Connections on WXXI AM, WEOS, the WXXI mobile app, and WXXINews.org.